Hello, Tempest fans. I am the Midnight Host, and I want to invite you to join me every Friday as I enjoy a new horror short story. For fans of The Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt, and Creep Show, Don't Fall Asleep is a podcast and YouTube channel featuring modern and classic horror stories. Narrated by Spencer Dillehay, the narrator for Tempest Investigations. Find us on YouTube and in podcast form. Search Don't Fall Asleep Channel on YouTube and Don't Fall Asleep Podcast in Google or your player of choice. Whatever you do, have a pint of Bob's Tail Ale before you go, and don't fall asleep.
Part 5. The next day, Matt went to the Tempest house after his study group had ended. One perk he had discovered about his increased strength was that his school bag now hardly seemed to weigh anything, no matter how many textbooks he put in it. He had it slung casually over his shoulder as he walked. Mercedes was back behind the desk in the front office. But otherwise, the house seemed empty. She looked almost like her normal self, but Matt could spot that she had obviously been crying a lot. Her face still had that puffy look to it. He decided not to ask her about it, and instead made a show of looking around the office as he entered.
"Hey, where are the others?"
"At work. The chocolate factory down by the pier apparently has stuff happen that's right out of Ghostbusters. Filing cabinets emptying themselves, conveyor belts breaking down, and gross slime everywhere. That sort of thing. Jim is down there, trying to see if he could spot the spirit, and Andrew went along because, well, I think they're trying to spend some time together, getting into the habit of them both being bosses around here."
"What about you?"
"Me? I'm not a boss. I'm just an employee who gets my paycheck every 2 weeks and counts myself happy when there's a bonus in it sometimes. I like to get out and do stuff, but honestly, the guys would have a hard time if I wasn't here. They have no idea how to advertise, or for that matter, do the books for the business. You'd think someone as old as Jim would have been able to learn how to file proper taxes."
"About that, I was kind of wondering," Matt said. "You said something about Jim being older than he looks, and with the seeing spirits thing and all. What's his deal?"
"His deal is a really long story, and I suppose he'll tell you about it himself at some point. But just in bullet point form, he's actually immortal, like he doesn't age. Or I don't know, maybe he does now since he just got those gray temples, but normally he doesn't. He died sometime in 1933 and came back to life as an immortal. His wife died too, but she didn't come back. And so he was really pissed at God or whatever for doing that to him."
"He thinks God did it."
Matt looked like he was trying to process the whole story.
"Well, he was a good Catholic back then. So yeah, of course he did."
"Does he know why? I mean, why he came back and she didn't?"
"No, and if I were you, I'd stay away from that particular topic. He can get really pissed off talking about it. He loved her a lot, and I think he still misses her every day. He's got a picture of her in his bedroom right next to his bed."
"How do you know that? Did you and he..." Mercedes laughed.
"Dios mio, no! He's my friend! And like 100 years older than me.
But I've used his bathroom when the downstairs one was broken and had to walk through his bedroom, so I couldn't help seeing it."
"And the seeing spirits part came when he became immortal?"
"Yes. He could see them and talk to them, so he spent a lot of time helping the cops and talking to dead relatives who wanted to pass on some message to the people left behind. It's actually sort of comforting to know that there's really something after death. I mean, I'm a Christian, but there's a difference between faith and then actually knowing something."
"Yeah, I guess you're right," Matt put down the school bag and sat in one of the chairs in the lobby. He considered telling Mercedes about his adventure on the beach yesterday, but decided it would sound too much like bragging.
So, what do you guys want me to do, now that I work for you?
That's up to Jim and Andrew, but as they're not here right now, you could start by getting me some coffee.
Mercedes leaned back in her chair.
Do you have any idea how good it makes me feel saying that?
I've been the one getting coffee for years now.
You mean from the kitchen?
No, I mean from the coffee shop on the corner. Large, black, one sugar, and a cinnamon stick.
Mercedes smiled and found her purse.
Here's money.
Okay, I can do that. Matt looked a little disappointed.
I just thought it would be something a little more, you know, exciting.
First day on the job, Matt. Trust me, there's usually a lot of excitement around here. At that moment, the door to the street opened, and a woman stepped in. She was in her 50s, stout and stocky, with a scarf wrapped so tightly around her head that Matt thought it had to almost cut off her circulation. Under her arm, she carried something small, brown, and furry that wiggled and tried to get free.
Mercedes' face lit up.
Aunt Connie! You must have been driving all day!
Of course I did, chica. It's 7 hours in a car, but we got an early start.
We? Oh, you brought Gordita!
Mercedes looked at the furry thing, which turned out to be an overweight wiener dog, when Connie put it down. It looked around with its little brown eyes before scurrying under Mercedes' desk to her feet. She giggled, lifting them up and out of the dog's way.
He's even fatter than last time I saw him.
There comes a point when you're too fat for exercise, as your grandfather always said.
Connie looked at Matt.
Hello. I'm Concepcion Alvarez, but you can call me Connie. Are you Mr. Corrigan?
No,
Matt said, smiling and reaching out his hand.
I'm Matt. I just work here. Nice to meet you.
Matt's our newest employee.
It's actually his first day on the job, Mercedes said.
Matt heard Cougar's spectral voice in his head make a growling sound, and his instinct kicked in. As he shook hands with Connie, Gordita shot out from under the table and went for his legs like a furry missile. He let go of her hand and made a step to evade the dog, who snapped its teeth at his ankles.
Gordita, stop that!
Connie snapped.
Behave yourself! We are guests here!
Matt took a couple of more steps away as Connie gathered up the wiener dog, who now made a growling sound at him. He looked at Cougar, who, even though she was intangible to both the dog and the other humans, eyed the dog suspiciously.
Well, I've set it up with Jim that you could live here in the house, Mercedes said. But I'm not sure about the deal with Gordita. I don't think Jim's much of a dog person.
We'll make it work, I'm sure. I'll keep him in my room if there's any problem.
Connie stroked the dog's head, and the growl became a sound almost like purring.
He's just very protective of me.
Do you have any bags?
Matt said.
I could help you get them.
That's nice of you, dear. It's the blue car, parked right outside.
She handed him the keys.
Maybe you ought to move it a little, though, Mercedes said.
That's where Jim usually parks. It's kind of his spot. Could you drive it around the corner, Matt?
Sure thing. I'll be right back.
Matt left and was a little amused to find that Gordita's eyes followed him when he left.
I still can't believe that it was all a scam, Andrew said as they walked along Fisherman's Wharf to the parking garage where they both had parked.
Around them, tourists crowded the street in piers in the afternoon sunshine, and the wind blew a cooling breeze in from the water. Out in the distance, they could see Alcatraz and the last boats going back and forth to it. The evening had begun to fall, even though the sun was still warm on their backs.
Why not?
Jim had pushed his hat to the back of his head and lit a cigarette as they walked.
Well, because there's so much supernatural crap in this town. Anything from ghosts and demons to harpies and shapeshifters, that at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if we ran into woozles and heffalumps.
Jim's brow furrowed.
What the hell are those?
They're from Winnie the... Never mind, it doesn't matter. My point is, this town has everything. I was expecting some kind of vicious monster coming out of the chocolate conveyor belt, not just some disgruntled employees who make practical jokes to sabotage the place.
I suppose it could have been. I've never actually seen spirits throw ectoplasm around as they reported it, so I was kind of curious myself.
Jim looked out over the water as they walked.
But seriously, how dedicated do you have to be to industrial sabotage to buy up that much KY jelly?
Andrew said.
They must have used gallons of the stuff.
Well, when they manage to clean the floor up, the factory can reopen like normal. That's the important part. Jim raised the plastic bag he had in his free hand.
And we got snacks for the next couple of weeks. That's not a bad thing either.
True, but it would have been even nicer if they'd actually paid us money. I mean, it could have been something supernatural. That's no reason to hold back payment.
Relax. Money isn't the issue. It should always be about the work, not the paycheck.
You know, Andrew said, speaking of money, there's something I've been meaning to ask you. As a full partner, I think I'm entitled to it.
Okay, shoot.
Where do we get our money from, Jim? You pay Mercedes and now Matt. You've paid me and Feline. You pay the rent, the utilities, the car. But as far as revenue goes, we're barely breaking even. And that's with Mercedes doing a bit of creative accounting for us.
Jim dragged on the cigarette. You're right. Money-wise, we're not exactly making a killing. But we don't need to.
How? Did you invest in stocks 100 years ago or something?
Jim looked at him, his eyes becoming serious. Okay. If you're a partner, you're entitled to know, like you said. When Ginger died, I was her sole beneficiary. She came from a very wealthy family who couldn't for the life of them understand what she was doing with a cop like me, and they kicked up a little fuss after she died, but there was nothing they could do. The will was ironclad. I inherited a lot of money, which I invested most of. I got a massive bonus for doing some missions for the Army Intelligence during World War II, which also went into the pot.
What kind of... Don't ask me that question, because I can't tell you. It's still classified.
Okay, but...
Then, Jim continued, cutting off Andrew, I had a guy come to me with an investment opportunity back in 1950 or so. I bought a lot of stocks in something I figured had a future. A phone company.
You own a phone company?
No, I own stocks in a phone company. I had a business manager do most of it for me, since I didn't want to show up at the stock exchange and not age a day. But I sold them years ago. These days, I think I have a lot of stocks in that computer company with the Apple on it, the Disney cartoon studio, oh, and the bookstore on the internet, too.
You're kidding, right? Andrew said. Are you telling me you're rich from stocks?
Technically, no. The Ginger Corrigan Foundation is. But aside from some minor charities, I'm the sole beneficiary of the foundation, and the money from the foundation funds the company. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Andrew put his hands in his pockets. At least that explains how you can have a house in a city like this and never have to worry about money.
Jim put a hand on his shoulder. I don't like to talk about money. Never have. But, like I said, full partner means full partner. In case something happens to me, you'd need to know where to go and who to talk to, so the money keeps flowing.
What do you mean, if something happens to you? I thought we'd established that your healing still worked.
We have, but things happen. You know that better than anybody. One moment you're alive, the next, bam, feeding daffodils. I'll give you a copy of all the information you need, so it won't be a problem. Andrew chewed his lip as they reached the parking garage. The sun had passed behind the buildings, and shadows began to grow larger.
Does Mercedes know? That you're rich, I mean.
No, although, since she started doing the books, she knows there's a revenue stream that's not just from the cases. I think she should be let in on it, too.
They began the climb up the concrete steps to the second level, but they hadn't gone more than a few steps before Jim stopped and put a hand on Andrew's arm.
Stop! Wait!
What's the matter?
Did you hear that sound?
Jim looked around in the empty stairwell.
There was something falling over and someone struggling.
I can't hear anything but the sounds from the pier, Andrew said. Fisherman's Wharf was a noisy place, even if you didn't include the sea lions and the people playing music on the boardwalk.
It's from above, level 2.
Jim put the plastic bag full of chocolate down on the floor and felt for his gun in his shoulder holster.
Listen, there it is.
A faint scream reached both their ears, and this time Andrew heard it just fine.
Let's go,
he said, and began to run up the stairs. Jim was right behind him, but Andrew ran faster. He emerged onto the parking level and turned his head back and forth, trying to locate the sound. The lights on this level hadn't come on yet, making it hard to see things clearly in the almost twilight light inside the garage. There were no more screams, but a faint scraping sound could still be heard coming from behind one of the rows of cars. Jim came out of the door behind him and moved to the right as Andrew moved to the left. They hadn't taken more than a few steps before a shadowy form emerged from behind one of the cars, moving quickly. Andrew stopped, reached for his gun, and drew it.
"Don't move!"
he said, with a voice every bit as steely as if he'd had an entire team of armed federal agents behind him. The shadow didn't slow down in the least. Jim came around the car just in time to see it throw itself at Andrew, who had his gun in front of his chest. The shadow body slammed him, and Jim could now see that it was a man dressed in jeans and a blue shirt with long red streaks of blood down the front. Andrew lost his balance and fell backward, the gun caught between the two men. Andrew's head hit the concrete, and he saw stars. He felt his attacker's fingers grip his shoulders, and they felt hard as metal. Jim ran towards them, but every step seemed to take forever in a dreamy, slow-motion haze. He saw the man opening his mouth and saw the fangs glistening with saliva as the man tried to bite Andrew's throat. Andrew pushed the hand with the gun higher, pushing the barrel against the man's chin, but that didn't seem to deter him at all. The teeth were just about to touch Andrew's throat when Jim's hand grabbed the man by the collar and hoisted him up and backward. Jim flexed his muscles and threw him as hard as he could against one of the cars, hearing the satisfying heavy thud of a body hitting metal. He didn't have any super strength, but a long life had given him plenty of time to learn several kinds of martial arts and ways of using your opponent's strength against him.
"You okay?"
Jim asked, reaching a hand down to Andrew.
"Yes, I'm... Look out!"
The man, or let's call things by their proper name, Jim thought, the vampire,
was on his feet in an instant. He opened his mouth again, snarling at them, and made to attack again.
"Stay behind me!"
Jim snapped, and stepped forward to give Andrew time to get up. The vampire clawed at him, but his fingers couldn't get a grip on Jim's leather jacket. Jim pushed both hands forward in a martial arts punch, hitting the vampire square in the face, and succeeded for a second in stunning him. He felt his fingers hurt when they hit the fangs, but wasn't worried. As long as his body was immortal, he was safe from the vampire's bite, something he'd found out long ago. To become a vampire, you had to be able to die.
"What the hell are you doing?"
Jim asked the vampire, who held his hand to his mouth, fingers coming away bloody
although it was Jim's blood. "Attacking people in San Francisco is illegal. Orders of the prince." The vampire licked his lips. "Not right now, it isn't," he said in a voice that lay somewhere between a whine and a snarl. His face got a surprised expression when he tasted the blood on his mouth.
"You taste
wrong?" "Yep, I know. You might have heard about me. I'm Jim Corrigan. I'm also just about the only one in this city who can kick your undead ass. So get the hell out of here right now, and you better keep running. I'll have the prince call a blood hunt on you as soon as I..."
"There is no prince," the vampire spat. "No prince, no blood hunts, no rules."
He eyed Andrew, who now had his weapon aimed squarely at the vampire's head. "I never saw one of you guys up close," Andrew said, his voice almost impressed. "Except at Convergence Club, and I never went up and introduced myself. But come any closer, and I'll show you exactly how much damage a Glock will do, and how good of a shot I am." "Bullets won't hurt them, Andrew," Jim said.
"Really? Because I can take his head clean off with this thing. Do you think he can walk away from that?"
The vampire looked from one to the other for a moment, then turned and ran between the cars, clearly feeling outmatched. He leaped over one of the cars and ran for the edge of the garage.
"Freeze!"
Andrew shouted. But before he could take the shot, the vampire jumped off the edge and fell to the ground below. When Jim and Andrew followed a few moments later, they saw a couple of trees and bushes and a view over the amusement pier. There were hundreds of people down there, and the vampire was gone, blended into the crowd. The twilight didn't make spotting him easier. Jim put his hand on Andrew's gun.
"Put that away. You can't fire from up here anyway. If you wanted him dead, you should have shot him when you said you would."
"You told him to get out. I didn't want to shoot him if you were letting him go."
"I didn't want to fight him. Not only because those things are much stronger than they look, but because you were here. I can heal the damage he would do me. You can't."
Jim looked at his hand, where the cuts were already almost gone.
"You punched a vampire in the teeth. That's pretty impressive,"
Andrew said, putting the gun in the holster.
"Yeah, broke one of them too. At least that's what it felt like. Now let's find out who screamed."
Searching the garage would have been a long project, but fortunately Jim had seen where the vampire had come running at Andrew from. They quickly spotted a teen boy lying on his side next to a car, keys still in his hand. He was unconscious, but alive, despite the wound in his neck.
"Let's get him to St. Francis, and then I think it's time I give the prince a call."
Jim lifted the boy's head while Andrew grabbed his feet.
"I really, really don't like what he just said. If there's no prince and no rules, San Francisco just got a whole lot more dangerous."